So, we're in the Varnashram system, Varnashram section of the seventh canto, chapters 11 to 15, and we're hearing about the description of the different Varnas and the different Ashrams. So, chapter 11, we heard a general description of the different Varnas, Brahmana especially, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra, but mainly Brahmana. We also heard about the idea of qualifications of every human being, 30 qualities that every human being should have in the 11th chapter. We then heard about the dharma of stri, of women, how women should act and behave, the qualities they should cultivate according to the Vedic standard. Then we heard about those who are in the Varna Sankara system, those who are outside the Vedic system. In chapter 12, we begin to hear about the different ashramas. So the first 10, 11 verses, they are about brahmacharya, the importance of a brahmachari, being brahmachari. And then we hear a description of vanaprastha for the remainder of chapter 12. Tonight we're beginning chapter 13. We'll go from verses 1 to 10. What is the subject matter of tonight? What is it? Actually, sannyas, yeah, because Svartaprasa has already been spoken of in the 12th chapter. Tonight we're hearing about the sannyas ashram. So if anyone is preparing for sannyas, this class will be relevant for you. Okay. Text number one. Sri Narad Muni said, a person able to cultivate spiritual knowledge should renounce all material connections. And merely keeping the body inhabitable, he should travel from one place to another, passing only one night in each village. In this way, without dependence in regard to the needs of the body, the sannyasi should travel all over the world. So does anyone think they are capable of emulating the description which is in this verse? Could anyone actually do it? What's that? Yeah, Prabhupada. But I mean, any of us, could we do it? What's that?
Theoretically, it sounds...
This description which has been given here is the Vedic description of a sannyasi. So it is very difficult. It's not an easy thing to do. When I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, I thought I'll be a brahmachari, then I'll become a sannyasi, then a guru, and probably a GVC. That was my first couple of years as a devotee, of thinking like that. But the longer you stay a devotee, you realize the harder it is to follow strictly all of these things. So now, the thought of taking sannyas, according to what's described in this verse, I don't know if I could do it or not. Maybe. I don't think I could do it at this point in my life, but maybe in the future, maybe. Like that. But in other words, the point is, it is not easy to be a sannyasi, especially in the age of Kali. Because the age of Kali is not a Vedic age. This is a Vedic description, and it's being spoken at a Vedic time, 5,000 years ago, when the world was very different, and people were much more qualified than what we are. So now, to do this, it's not an easy thing. Like that. So those who actually are doing it, they're very, very advanced. Just like His Holiness, Devamrita Swami, will be here at the end of the week. So you see, he's actually doing this on a practical level. You know, he's living a very renounced, surrendered lifestyle, which is not easy to do like that. Easy to speak about, but not easy to do it like that. So now we're going to hear in the next three verses about the description of the duties or the dharma of a sannyasi. Text number 2. A person in the renounced order of life may try to avoid even a dress to cover himself. If he wears anything at all, it should be only a loincloth. And when there is no necessity, a sannyasi should not even accept a danda. A sannyasi should avoid carrying anything but a danda and a kamandalu. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Prabhupada doesn't give a purport here, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes a few comments on these verses. So he points out that the duty of a sannyasi is to be renounced. So renunciation is the basic principle of bhakti. Savabhom Bhattacharya says, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogena, which means anyone who is practicing bhakti, they have to cultivate renunciation or vairagya. So for all devotees, we should be feeling a sense of renunciation. And we are renounced. If you compare us to the non-devotees, we're extremely renounced. Just like I was speaking to one devotee before, and they were saying that an Indian person, because they're an Indian body devotee, and they said that an Indian person who's not a devotee, they were criticizing us, the devotees, saying, you won't eat here, you won't eat there, you won't eat this, you won't eat that, you won't come to our house, you won't accept what we cook, like that. So they criticize us like that. So we are very renounced compared to the average person. The average person will eat almost anywhere, will eat most things, will be quite lenient. But we're very strict. And this is because of renunciation. We're renouncing bhoga, or the spirit of enjoyment. Bhogaishwarya prasakta no. A devotee is renouncing sense gratification and material opulence. So the basic principle of a sannyasi is that he is renounced. He renounces bhoga and aishwarya. Renounces opulence, and he renounces sense gratification. So that is the basic principle. Now, we can apply these basic principles to ourselves. Obviously, we can't apply them to the level that a sannyasi can, or what's being described here, but still we have to renounce, in order to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to renounce aishwarya, which means opulence, and sense gratification. And it's necessary for every devotee, to different degrees. Of course, grihasthas, we don't live like sannyasis, but at the farm I have a calendar. You know, every day you turn it over and Prabhupada gives them a quote. You know, every day, it's different ones like that, but there's one I've got. So only a few days ago, actually, Prabhupada was writing a letter to his disciple, Rupanuga Prabhu, and Srila Prabhupada says on that quote, it was only about 3 or 4 days ago, he says that you are a grihastha, but if you are using all of your material facility as a grihastha in the service of Krishna, your wife, your children, your home, everything is being used in Krishna's service, he said, you are as good as a tridandi sannyasi. Because tridandi means the mind, the body, the words, and the service of Krishna. So Prabhupada said, if you are using these things in the service of Krishna, you are a sannyasi by definition. Because everything is being used in Krishna's service. That is sannyas. It is renunciation. So in one sense, any devotee is a sannyasi, in one sense. But in another sense, sannyasis are superior to the other varnas and the other ashramas. It is said that the sannyasi is the guru of all the varnas and all the ashramas. If someone's actually a sannyasi, if someone's actually practicing sannyas very strictly, you know, like His Holiness Deva Marita Swami or all of the qualified sannyasis in our society and outside of our society also, the Gaudiya sannyasis. Sannyasis are very qualified if they're strictly following. So they should be offered respect. Srila Prabhupada said, why do we offer obeisances to the sannyasi? Yeah, we get purification. Prabhupada said, why are we offering obeisances to them?
Because
he is represents. But what did Prabhupada specifically say?
He
that renounce the material.
Material world, yeah. Prabhupada said they have conquered sex desire. Is it because a sannyasi has conquered sex desire, we offer respect to him, we offer obeisances to him. So that's very powerful. An actual sannyasi is very powerful. I remember Subhag Swami, His Holiness Subhag Swami, he comes to Melbourne, not very much anymore, but he used to come sometimes. I remember he said one time, he said when a sannyasi, or a very fixed up brahmachari, when he speaks, his words are like fire. Which means the words are very potent, very powerful. Someone's actually a sannyasi, they're very potent, very powerful. So they should be offered respect. We should bow down to them. We should serve them. They're the guru of all of the varnas and all of the ashramas. So a sannyasi should live simply. And you see, so many sannyasis in ISKCON show this example. His Holiness Indrajumna Swami, you know, he, a few years ago, I remember he had a bag, which he used to travel, he travels all around the world, had one bag, and then I remember he was writing in his diary, he wanted a smaller bag, because he thought, I'm not practicing proper renunciation, I have too many things, so then he reduced it, and he had a smaller bag, and he said, now I can just travel with one bag, which was so small, he could just take it onto the, directly onto the plane. Which means it must be less than 10 kilos or 7 kilos. Or, I mean, just like a small bag. All of his possessions were in that bag. So that is an actual sannyasi. So a renounce, he doesn't have material possessions. So there's very high things. Very high level of renunciation. Most of us cannot do like that. You know, if I go to India, I need a big suitcase. Going over, I need a big one. And then coming back, I need a big one as well. The sannyasi, he will travel very simply. Actually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he took sannyas in 1972. And then not long after that, he was going to preach. And Srila Prabhupada was on the roof of where they were staying. And he was walking out and he turned around and he saw Prabhupada. So he offered full obeisances to Prabhupada. And he just had a little, like one bag. You know, in Loy Bazaar, you buy like a little cloth bag. Like a shoulder bag. Everything he owned was in that bag. So when Prabhupada saw that, he smiled and he said, Parikra Jagacharya. He said, very good. He said, this is sannyas. Everything in just one bag. Just probably a change of cloth and a few other things. So sannyasi should be very simple. We can't imitate that, but we should simplify our existence. So, any points?
Translation says that sannyasi should not even accept danda. Sannyasi should not should avoid carrying anything but danda. I
can't remember. It does. I couldn't understand what that meant. So he should renounce it, then it says that's all he should carry. Like that. So it's not really clear like that. But I think the basic principle is he should just be simple as much as possible. Any other points?
Mention that when there is no necessity, there is a qualified necessity, then he should not accept the danda. So there is an option then. When there is a necessity, then he is allowed to carry. But now it comes to the question of when is it necessary to for a sannyasi to carry the danda.
So in verse 7 and 8, right in the next few verses, when we get to them, Prabhupada speaks of four types of sannyasis. So it's not that there are all sannyasis are the same. Bahudaka, Kutichaka, Parigrajakacharya, and Paramahamsa. So then Prabhupada, he elaborates a little bit more. So when we get to that point, then he'll discuss it. But not all sannyasis are the same, that's the point. Not that every sannyasi is on the same level of advancement. Like that, so. Okay. The sannyasi, completely satisfied in the self, should live on alms begged from door to door. Not being dependent on any person or any place, he should always be a friendly well-wisher to all living beings and be a peaceful, unalloyed devotee of Narayana. In this way, he should move from one place to another. So Prabhupada, there's no purport there, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes a small comment also. So basically, the basic principle of sannyas is that we are dependent upon Krishna. A sannyasi does not even store food for the next meal. It's a very advanced level of devotional service. Imagine if you didn't have a pantry. Imagine if you didn't have a cupboard full of bhoga. Could you live like that? We're safe. We're secure. We can go home. We know there's food in the pantry. Sannyasi, an actual sannyasi, doesn't live like that. He's just wandering on foot in the Vedic tradition, just wandering from village to village. And it says that he only stays in one village each night. He won't stay in the same place a second time. And he'll just do matukari, which means he'll just go and he'll just beg some alms, and whatever is presented, that's what he'll take. So he's dependent on Krishna. So sannyas means you are fully dependent on Krishna. It means you renounce your securities in the material world. When you take sannyas, you can't keep a bank account. Right? You can't keep material possessions. But you're depending on Krishna for your subsistence and your endurance, your material facility. Krishna will protect you. He will maintain you. That is the principle. So a sannyasi, he will feel like that. So we should also try that, because the basic principle of bhakti is that Krishna is the protector, Krishna is the maintainer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses this in his verses on Sharanagati. So the basic principle of devotion, two of the six items of Sharanagati are Sharana, surrender to Krishna. That Krishna is my maintainer, Krishna is my protector. So every devotee should feel like this. Krishna is maintaining me, Krishna is protecting me. But especially the sannyasi, he completely renounces all material possessions, practically, and he just depends on Krishna for his maintenance. Now, he's just simply satisfied rendering devotional service to Krishna. That is sannyas. Sannyas means that he just wants to constantly preach Krishna consciousness. He just constantly wants to be engaged in service to Krishna. So we should also be feeling like that as devotees. The more we progress in Krishna consciousness, we just want to do service for Krishna. We just want to spread Krishna consciousness. We just want to preach Krishna consciousness. That is our mission. Every devotee should feel like that. We just want to do service. We just want to preach. And a sannyasi, he completely surrenders to that level of devotion to Krishna. His only meditation is preaching and spreading Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada set the highest example as a sannyasi. He took sannyas. If you read the pastime in the Lilamrita, Prabhupada had several dreams where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ordered him take sannyas. And Prabhupada said the first two times when he had that dream, he said he couldn't understand how he could even do it. And he said he was actually almost like fearful to do it. He thought, this is like, how can I take sannyas? How can I do it? But then he spoke to one of his godbrothers, and the godbrother also encouraged him and said, no, you have to take sannyas. So he saw that this was being instructed to him by his spiritual master, and he fully surrendered to that position. So he showed us the highest level of sannyas. The highest level of sannyas is just completely preaching Krishna consciousness and fully engaging in devotional service. Now, each of the ashramas has a religious principle, which Prabhupada has discussed earlier in the Bhagavatam. What is the religious principle for the brahmachari?
Study.
Vidya. Brahmachari is especially meant to study. What is the religious principle for the grihastha?
Dana.
Dana means charity. A grihastha becomes purified by giving charity. Because grihasthas, they're very attached to their money. So to give charity is purifying for the grihastha. And the vanaprastha, his religious principle is? Spend more time in study. What's that? No, it's tapasya. Tapa. to do austerity. Vanaprastha is meant to do austerity. In other words, when you get to the Vanaprast level, you should do more austerity and give up material attachment, material comfort. And then the religious principle for the sannyasi is satcham. Satcham means preaching the absolute truth. So ideally, that is what the sannyasa ashram is meant for. Sannyasis are just meant to preach Krishna consciousness, to spread the absolute truth. And that is all the sannyasi is really dedicated to, serving Krishna and giving Krishna to others. That is the point of the ashram. Not that. Okay, any points? Okay. The sannyasi should always try to see the supreme pervading everything and see everything, including this universe, resting on the supreme. So actually this is sannyas. Sannyas means technically he is on the spiritual platform. When you're on the spiritual platform, that is, Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita, Pandit Samadarshana. That is sannyas, ashram. He sees everybody and everything is connected to Krishna. He doesn't see anybody, it means any living entity, and he doesn't see any object as being separate from Krishna. That is the vision. If you want to maintain sannyas, you have to develop that vision. You have to see every living entity as being Krishna's servant, and every object or everything in creation is Krishna's energy that is meant to be used in his service. And that is the only way you can see, you can maintain sannyas. If a sannyasi sees another living entity, especially the opposite sex, for his sense enjoyment, then he'll fall down from sannyas. And we see generally that's what will take place. If a sannyasi falls down, it is generally for this reason. Or, if he sees that the material facilities, which are provided by Krishna, are for his sense gratification, then also he will fall down. So Srila Prabhupada says, he writes a letter, and Prabhupada says, be very careful that the spirit of sense gratification does not come in the name of Krishna consciousness. In other words, as devotees, we say, oh yeah, I need this, and I need that, and I have to use this, and I have to use that, but then actually we're using it for our sense gratification. You know, sometimes devotees, we've got a watch, but we think, oh, that's not a good enough watch, I need this particular watch. Or this brand, and then a more expensive one, and a more attractive one, and like that. And then we go, and I've got this car, but you know, I don't really need this car. I can have a better car. And then we just go on and on and on. But that's just sense gratification in the name of Krishna consciousness. And then we justify everything. We say, oh, it's for preaching. Oh, I have to have a good car because then everyone, devotees should have nice cars. You know, if we don't have nice cars, then the public will not respect us. Middle class people will think, oh, I don't want to become a Hare Krishna. They all drive old, unreliable cars. So devotees should drive good cars. That's a fact. But we should not be overly attached. In other words, we shouldn't be too opulent like that. Otherwise, we will become influenced, and otherwise other people will become envious of us. But devotees should live a comfortable, respectable life. If people come to your home, your home should be comfortable, it should be nice, it should be middle class. You know, basically what most people have. It should be like that. It should not be too simple. Because if you're trying to preach to people and they come to your home and it's too simple, they may not be attracted to Krishna consciousness. So therefore we should have a basic material facility. But then it's a fine line of not going the other way. Then we start having too much opulence and too much material facility. But then we may become bewildered and attached. So Prabhupada says, be very careful. Don't let sense gratification enter in the name of Krishna consciousness. And you see Srila Prabhupada himself. Prabhupada was extremely wealthy. But he wasn't like the other gurus who came at the same time as him. Just like we had Rajneesh and maybe Guru Maharaji and some of the others like that. Rajneesh, when he left the world, he had 100... Rolls Royces. A Rolls Royce car, I think they cost like about $500,000. So 100 means, what's that? It's like $500 million. just on cars. And you see, Prabhupada wasn't like that. You know, Prabhupada wasn't going from temple to temple, you know, just being picked up in expensive cars. That wasn't what he was using the money for. Prabhupada was extremely wealthy, but he didn't use the money. He used it in Krishna's service, right? Not for his sense gratification. There's a very subtle difference. So a sannyasi must be renounced. Otherwise, he loses his position. I remember my spiritual master, he actually said, he came and stayed here in Melbourne one time, and this temple's very opulent. You know, it's a nice facility. You know, you go up to the rooms upstairs, it's a nice facility. And I remember he came and he actually said, as a sannyasi, he said, actually, this is too opulent. He said, for a sannyasi, it's too opulent. He accepts it because he's a guru and sannyasi, and you know, we offer like that. But he said, actually, it's not correct. He said, sannyasi should live more simply like that. You see, like His Holiness Radhanath Swami, if you go to Chalpati, Mumbai, have you been into his room? They're very simple. Right? Just some grass mat on the ground. Maharaj sleeps on the floor. Very simple. Right? That is sannyas. Sannyas means they voluntarily live simply and depend on Krishna. So that is the actual standard. So it's a high standard. Most grihasthas can't do that. Yeah, most grihasthas can't just sleep on some grass mat on the floor. Grihasthas, they need some futon, some facility like that. I sleep on the floor, but my futon's probably about that thick. I'm a sense gratifying. Whereas a brahmachari is that thick. You know, so I've fallen down. But most of us cannot sleep like that. I don't know if I can sleep on a grass mat. I have to try it. But this is, sannyasis are very powerful in their renunciation. They can do these things. Any points?
I think thick mattress
and thick quilt. Who was that?
I think thick mattress and
a
thick quilt.
Who? You. So forward. Any other points?
See, one of our brothers is visiting Krishna. One of our meetings, he was telling us that when Radhana Swami was traveling abroad, so given the number of visitors that he's having nowadays in Chowpatty, they decided and they expanded and increased his room size. And they made all kinds of facilities. And Maharaj came back, so everyone was queued up and lined up, you know, wanted to see his expressions, how happy he was. But when he came there, to their disappointment, I think Maharaj was actually really upset with them. He said, "Who did this?" And then he said, "Nobody came forward." And then Maharaj said, "I want it restored back to the original size, original condition. I don't need this." He said something like, The temple may expand, but I don't have to become any bigger than what I am. Something like that. So let me be me. Let the temple expand. I just connected that.
Yeah, Prabhupada walked into this room, up there, just there. First time he walked in there, Mother Teresa Prabhu was the GBC, and they just made that. It's quite a beautiful room if you go up there to Prabhupada. It's just like it is now. It's exactly how it was when Prabhupada was there. And Prabhupada walked in, and he was like a little boy. And he said, "Is this for me?" And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, that's for you." And Prabhupada was like, "Oh." Prabhupada was like, "For me?" And Prabhupada was happy just to have a simple hut or something like that. But he accepted those things because they'd been offered by his disciples. The difference was Prabhupada was not attached. And we saw that in his life. Even though he became extremely wealthy, Prabhupada was incredibly wealthy. He owned ISKCON. Everything in ISKCON was Prabhupada's by law. But he never lived opulently, ever. So you see, even though he had so much material facility, he never became affected by it. But most of us aren't like that. And most of us get a new watch and we're like, you know, for 3 days we can't think of anything but the watch. Look at the watch all the time. Or you get a new computer and just become completely bewildered. you know, spend the whole day, you know, like, you know, seeing what it does, or an iPhone or something like that. You know, you lose your iPhone, your mind goes, you know, you can't think of anything but the iPhone for until you find it again. Even Indrajumna Swami, he was staying up here one time, and he had this little, what do you call it? It's like a, just a little thing, and then you can turn, it's like a little dial.
iPhone.
No, it's like just a little, like, piece of plastic. It has a dial and you just twist it and it tells you what time it is any place in the world. And he uses that just so he can work out, you know, if he has to ring another place in the world, he can work out like that. And he lost it. And he said he woke up and he said he couldn't think of anything except this little thing. And he was telling us that in his class, he was saying this is what the nature of the material attachment is. You become attached to something and you can't stop thinking about that thing. Your consciousness just becomes absorbed in that thing. So we have to be very careful as devotees to live simply. Even if we get, sometimes we get extra money, we get inheritances, or, you know, we get a new job, we get a higher salary, but we should still live very simple, not that. Keep things the same. Okay. During unconsciousness and consciousness, and between the two, he should try to understand the self and be fully situated in the self. In this way, he should realize that the conditioned and liberated stages of life are only illusory and are not factual. With such a higher understanding, he should see the absolute truth pervading everything. Would it be wonderful?
The unconscious state is nothing but ignorance, darkness of material existence. And in the conscious state, one is awake. The marginal states between consciousness and unconsciousness has no permanent existence. Therefore, one who is advanced in understanding the self should understand that unconsciousness and consciousness are but illusions, for they fundamentally do not exist. Only the Supreme Absolute Truth exists. As confirmed by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita 9.4, Maya Tadam Idam Sarvam. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Everything exists on the basis of the Krishna's impersonal teaching. Nothing can exist without Krishna. Therefore, the advanced devotee of Krishna can see the Lord everywhere without illusion.
So, any points? Yeah, we can see it both ways because Lord Chaitanya himself says that I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a, even though he was in the sannyas ashram. So a devotee automatically has these qualities. But one who is not a devotee has to cultivate these qualities. Or you could say one who is a mixed devotee, because even when one's a sannyasi, this will come out in the next few verses, it doesn't mean he's fully realized yet. It's still an ashram. Even though someone's in the sannyas ashram, it's still an ashram. Ashram designates a material designation. So the bodily concept of life is still there. One needs to become purified. It's still a process of purification. Sometimes we mix it up. And there's a problem we have sometimes in ISKCON when sannyasis run into difficulty. We say, how could that have happened? We have to understand they're still conditioned. They're still getting purified. So it can go both ways. You can look at it that the person is a devotee and this is his vision. Or you can say, this is what he's cultivating. So then it can be a devotee or a non-devotee. Which is good. Okay. So, in order to maintain sannyas, you have to have realization. And Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita. There is jnana and there is vijnana. Yeah? So jnana means knowledge and vijnana means realization of the knowledge. So in order to be a sannyasi, you have to be knowledgeable, but you also have to have realization. It can't be theoretical. Otherwise, you can't maintain the ashram. And we see sometimes the sannyasis, they fall into difficulty because they're not fully realized as yet. Like that. So ideally, if one's a sannyasi, you should realize the difference between matter and spirit, between reality and illusion, between Maya and Krishna. But this is a very high level of realization. Ultimately, this is what it takes to be a sannyasi, to be completely fixed. But not all sannyasis are like that. Some sannyasis are still sadhakas and still practicing and still coming up to that level. But the Bhagavatam here is saying that we should all come to that level, where we become realized. At this point in time, we're still in Maya. We're still in the bodily concept of life. Grihasthas, sannyasis, vanaprasthas, all of us are still affected by the material energy. But the Bhagavatam is encouraging all of us to come to the level of realization, where we see Maya as something which is temporary. And Prabhupada says in the final line of this purport, he says, Krishna is everywhere. And a devotee, or someone who has pure realization, he sees Krishna everywhere. And as Prabhupada says, without illusion. He sees Maya and Krishna differently. And actually, for us to advance in Krishna consciousness, this is the vision that we have to cultivate, where we only see Krishna. In other words, we see everything as being Krishna's energy. We don't see anything as being separate from Krishna. Right? What is the definition of Maya? Right? Yeah, that which is not. Right? Which means we're seeing something which is separate. Maya is not separate from Krishna. The material energy is not separate from Krishna. Right? That chair is not separate from Krishna. It's used in Krishna's service. So a devotee sees everything is being used in Krishna's service. That is not separate from Krishna. Then there's no illusion. But when one sees something as being separate from Krishna, then he's in Maya, which means illusion, because nothing is separate from Krishna. Right? Every chair in the world is meant to be used in Krishna's service. So every chair is spiritual, right? But the non-devotee, he will not see, oh, that chair, that is not to be used in Krishna's service, right? We can use that chair for some mundane purpose. So because he sees it like that, then he's in illusion, he's in Maya, he's separate from Krishna. But a devotee, especially a sannyasi, he doesn't see anything as separate from Krishna. And that's how he stays away from Maya. As Krishna says in the Gita, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service. Use everything in Krishna's service and then Maya will stay away from you. So if we stop using things in Krishna's service, Maya comes very close. In like a needle and out like a plow. Maya just needs a little crack. Just give a little bit of compromise and that's it. She's, we've all experienced that. We just compromise a little bit, and then Maya just, a couple of days later, we just think, what happened? So that is Maya's potency. Any points?
What is the difference between consciousness and unconsciousness?
Means sleep and awake.
What
do
you mean awake?
Awake means like now.
But this is it. Both have illusion.
Yeah, because most people, when they're awake, they're in Maya. They forget Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, when they're asleep, they forget Krishna as well. The perfect example is Srila Prabhupada, because Prabhupada, even when he was asleep, he did not forget Krishna. Which is a very, I mean, that's the perfect level of consciousness.
So between the two, there is no permanent existence.
It means that then you're in material consciousness. like Bhagavatam says, what we're in now, even though we say we're awake, but the Bhagavatam says this is a dream. So it's not really. It's more like a dream than a reality. The Bhagavatam says in the second canto, it says everything that we experience in the material world is a dream. Compared to being what's in the spiritual world right now. Like everyone in the spiritual world, that's reality. That's like being awake. What we're experiencing now is actually like being a dream. It's not really reality. Bhagavatam says this is not really reality. It's a dream.
So when we think about Krishna and his rope and everything related to him, it means that the time is when we are awake. Otherwise, we are in all positions.
Yeah, that means we're becoming awake. That's called sadhana. Sadhana means we're practicing. It means we're going in the right direction. One day we'll wake up, we'll be in Vrindavan. Serving Tulsi Devi. In a spiritual body. That's okay. Since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor, in which the living entity manifests himself and disappears. That's okay.
The living entity is in the material world, not only at present, but also in the past, held and involved in trying to solve the problems of birth and death. Some stress that end point of illusory existence of everything material, whereas others stress life, trying to preserve it perpetually and enjoy it to the best of their ability. Both of them are fools and rascals. It is advised that one observe the eternal time factor, which is the cause of the material body's appearance and disappearance, and that one observe the living entity's entanglement in this time factor. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore sings in the Gita Puli, Anadi Karma Phale, Padi Bhavana Navajale, Taribhare Na Dehi Upaya. One should observe the activities of eternal time, which is the cause of birth and death. Before the creation of the present millennium, the living entities were under the influence of the time factor, and within the time factor, the material world came into existence, and is again annihilated. Bhutva bhutva praviyate. Being under the control of the time factor, the living entities appear and die, life after life. This time factor is the impersonal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives the living entities, conditioned by the material nature, a chance to emerge from this nature by surrendering to him.
So what are the points here?
Points are very similar to the Chatushloki of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is like the earlier point also which you made, that a sannyasi has to develop the practice of distinguishing reality from illusion, whereas a pure devotee does not have anything called as illusion in his dictionary because he sees Krishna everywhere. Which is like the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, the second Chatushloki of the Teratam Yat Pradiyata. Where it says that anything that is seen outside of Krishna is, there is nothing outside of Krishna. Anything seen separately from him is called illusion, which actually doesn't exist. The falsity of illusion. So, and here again it's talking about the fact that everything else, bhutva bhutva praviyate, everything else will be destroyed except the Lord. So, we will remain at the end of the point. Like very much like the first verse of the Shloki.
Yeah, you're correct. The point is correct. Any other points? So basically, this is the vision of a sannyasi. What is his vision? He sees the difference between Maya and Krishna, like that. So he understands that everyone in the material world is simply under the influence of the time factor. And that's how he sees everything. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he had one disciple. She was only 12 years old, very young girl. He initiated her mother and the daughter. The daughter had leukemia, which means she was going to die very soon. So she came to Vrindavan to leave her body. So when they arrived in Vrindavan, the mother and the daughter, they asked Harisori Prabhu if they could have a darshan with Srila Prabhupada. So they came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada just finished his massage. He would have a massage like middle of the day, probably about 11 to 12:30 or so. So he'd have his massage, and then after that he would take bath, and then he would go and take prasad. So Prabhupada's schedule was very punctual like that. So they came in just after the massage. So after the massage he would just go and take bath. So it wasn't a time when he would see people. So they came in, and the young girl, she was upset because she had leukemia. She was going to die. And she came to Vrindavan to leave her body. And the mother was also emotional. So they came in and they offered obeisances to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was kind of standing up and getting ready to go and take bath. And they started saying to Prabhupada, they were upset. They began to cry. And Prabhupada said, what is it? And the mother said that, you know, she is upset because she is going to die. And Srila Prabhupada said, she will die today, I will die tomorrow, and you will die the next day. So what is the problem? And everyone just became completely sober. And all of the, like the bewilderment, it began to lift. Like that. But then then Prabhupada, he more or less, that's more or less what he said. He started walking to take bath. You know, she's just about to die, and then Prabhupada was just going to take bath. He was just completely locked in transcendence. And as he went, he looked back at them, and he could see they were still unsettled, their minds were unsettled. So Prabhupada said, what is it? Huh? And the mother said, but Prabhupada, she's afraid of Yamaraj. And Prabhupada just looked, and he said, she will die today, I will die tomorrow, and you will die the next day. But for a devotee, there is no death. There is only service to Krishna. And then Prabhupada just walked into his bathroom, just closed the door, and that was it. Because Prabhupada, he could see things in reality. There is no death. There is only a change of body. For us, it's very fearful. But for Prabhupada, there's no fear. Because he is above the bodily concept of life. And then that young girl, she became pacified just by a couple of minutes with Prabhupada. And a couple of months later, she left her body in Vrindavan. But she was much more peaceful just after a couple of minutes with Prabhupada, because he just lifted everyone to the spiritual platform. So that is how a sannyasi sees. And Prabhupada was a paramahamsa. He's a sannyasi, but he's like the topmost level of consciousness of the living entities. Any points? Now we're going to hear about some of the activities of the sannyasi, some of the instructions for the sannyasi. So if you read Nectar of Devotion, 64 Angas of Bhakti, you'll also read these instructions. So these instructions which Rupa Goswami gives in the 64 items of devotional service, they're coming actually from the Bhagavatam directly. Literature that is a useless waste of time. In other words, literature without spiritual benefit should be rejected. One should not become a professional teacher as a means of earning one's livelihood. Nor should one indulge in arguments and counter-arguments. Nor should one take shelter of any cause or faction. Leela Mai, you'd like to read that?
A person desiring to advance in spiritual understanding should be extremely careful to avoid reading ordinary literature. The world is full of ordinary literature that creates unnecessary agitation in the mind. Such literature, including newspapers, dramas, novels and magazines, is factually not meant for advancement in spiritual knowledge. Indeed, it has been described as a place of enjoyment for crows. Tat vayasham sirtam.
Anyone advancing in spiritual knowledge must read such literature. Furthermore, one should not concern oneself with the conclusions of various logicians or philosophers. Of course, those who preach sometimes need to argue with the contentions of opponents, but as much as possible, one should avoid an argumentative attitude. In this connection, Srila Madhvacharya says, Aprayojana paksham na samsreet, Naprayojana pakshisyan, Navrita sishya bandhakrit, Na kodasina sakshani, Na virudani sasyasayet, Na vyakya yo pajiveta, Na nisidan samacharet, Evam bhuta yate yati tat eka sarano hari. There is no need to take shelter of unnecessary literature or concern oneself with many so-called philosophers and thinkers who are useless for spiritual advancement. Nor should one accept a disciple for the sake of fashion or popularity. One should be careless to these so-called shastras, neither opposing nor favoring them. And one should not earn one's livelihood by taking money for explaining Shastra. A sannyasi must always be neutral and seek the means to advance in spiritual life, taking full shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord.
So what are the points here? Few devotees talking about going to Mayapur, but you know, we say to those devotees, you've got to do full-time service. You know, I taught at the MIHE in Mayapur. I went and stayed in Mayapur and taught there and everything, but I realized it wasn't enough for me. I had to come back to the West and do other things, you know, manage or do whatever else I do as well. If you're going to live in Mayapur, you have to be fully engaged. Otherwise, the mind just goes... I was reading yesterday... did you get that email? You know, Karuna Nidhi Prabhu always sends out the emails. The one about Prabhupada with Mr. Setty came a few days ago. And then Mr. Setty, he was an amazing man. He came to help Prabhupada when they were fighting for that land in Juhu, in Mumbai. So he was helping Prabhupada. He was in construction, so he was helping Prabhupada. So the first time he met Prabhupada, he heard Prabhupada come from America with all the Western disciples, and he read about him in the newspaper. So he thought, oh, I want to go and meet this sadhu. He was also in another spiritual group, and the other spiritual group, they also chanted Hare Krishna. So he was attracted to meet Prabhupada. So he went to meet Prabhupada early in the morning. They were having a darshan. And Prabhupada said, so what do you do? Like, he's saying to Prabhupada, I belong to this spiritual group, and we also chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So Prabhupada said, tell me, what is your day? Like, what is your schedule? So he said, I get up in the morning, I read the newspaper, and I have some toast and some tea, and then I go to the work and I work in construction all day like that. And Prabhupada said, what is the difference between you and a pig? Prabhupada, this is the way he used to preach to me. He said, what is the difference between you and a pig? And Mr. Seti thought about it. And he said, actually, there is no difference. And then Prabhupada said, oh, so I want you to start chanting every day, japa. So he followed Prabhupada's instructions. And he did some very nice service for Prabhupada. Did you read that story? I love that story. Yeah, and then, municipality, they came and they knocked down, there was a temporary temple for Radha Rasa Bihari, so they knocked it down. And then we had to get the temple rebuilt, some structure rebuilt, by Monday morning, otherwise we were going to lose that land. So that was Friday night. So then Mr. Seti, he was like a kshatriya. So he had a couple of guns. So he said to his son, he said, go and get the guns. So he got the guns and he got his construction company to rebuild the structure over the weekend. So he stayed up all night and it was raining, like monsoon. So him and his son, they stood at the front gate of Juhu all night, two nights with the guns. And then the man who was trying to rob them out of the land, he came and he threatened them. And he said, if you stay here, I'll send 50 gundas to come and get you. And Mr. Seti, he said, I've got 250 bullets. So he said, send 200 of them. He said, don't send 50. He said, send 200 because I have 250 bullets here. He said, you send as many as you like. He stayed there all night and they didn't send anyone. Because he had the gun. Him and his son were there with the gun all night. And then he told Prabhupada the story. And Prabhupada was very happy. And he left the world a couple of years ago, so he must have gone back to the spiritual world for doing that service to Prabhupada. And he told Prabhupada that in the riots between the Hindus and the Muslims when he was young, he was walking down the street and he used to carry a sword because of the riots, it was dangerous. So he said he was walking down the street and three Muslims jumped out from the side with knives to attack him and to kill him. So he took out the sword and he cut off one of their heads. And their head fell on the ground, and the other two Muslims saw and they just ran off. And Prabhupada was very appreciative of him. He was actually a kshatriya. He had this spirit, and Prabhupada very much liked him. And whenever he came to Prabhupada, he would just sit in front of Prabhupada very humbly. And then Prabhupada blessed him. So, basically, it is being said here that we should not be like crows. A sannyasi should not just read books just to become learned. Sometimes we like to impress everyone. We like to give class. And sometimes you hear devotees giving class, but they're just trying to impress everyone. They're quoting all the shlokas and telling all the pastimes and all the facts and the details and 12 mahajanas and like this. They know all the facts. But it's not really about bhakti. It's more about jnana. It's more about learning. So the Bhagavatam is saying, don't be a sannyasi and just read books to sound like you are learned. That's not the point. We should just study the books to purify our consciousness. That's why we study the Bhagavatam. So our consciousness is purified. We should become learned, because Prabhupada instructed us to become learned. We should all be pundits. Prabhupada was Bhakti Vedanta. He was known to be very learned. He was very learned. So we should also be learned. But we should not just try to impress everyone with so much knowledge. So sannyasi should not just read books for the sake of reading books. He should be preaching to try to influence people to take to Krishna consciousness. That's the point. So then it says that he should not be in the business or he should not be in the or he should not be preaching as a business. You see that in India now. Sometimes people will give public discourses on the Bhagavatam or other scriptures, but the main motivation is to feed the family, just to make money. They'll speak and people will pay and give them donations, but it's more like a business. So then the spirit of the Bhagavatam is lost. the actual purity of the Bhagavatam is lost. When it becomes a money-making endeavor, that's not the point of the Bhagavatam. The point of the Bhagavatam is to purify the audience. That is why we speak. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, three people get purified when the Bhagavatam is spoken. The person who speaks, the person who inquires, and the person who listens. And he says in that order. He said the person who speaks gets the most purified because he's concentrating the most. Right? The person who inquires gets purified the second most because he's really listening and he's asking questions. And the person who listens, he gets purified the least of the three. But the point is that everyone who hears the Bhagavatam, the speaker, the inquirer, the listener, they all get purified. So that is the point. When we speak Bhagavatam, when we listen to Bhagavatam, we're trying to purify our consciousness. It's not a material activity, it's a spiritual activity. Unfortunately, now sometimes it's a material activity. People go there, the audience are going there because they think, oh, if I'm here and I'm listening, I'm getting punya. I'm getting credit, and you know, this will help me get a good wife, or you know, my daughter needs to find a husband or something. Or so they go to Bhagavatam because they think it's like a punya, it's a way of getting pious credit, so good things will happen. That's not the reason we go. And the speaker, he should not also be speaking for material reasons, just so he'll get followers or money or fame. He should be speaking because he wants to help the audience get closer to Krishna. And that's why Prabhupada was successful, because that was his only motivation. You know, Prabhupada never lectured just to attract people for material reasons. Prabhupada was lecturing because he wanted everyone to become devotees of Krishna. So then when he speaks like that, it is potent, and when the audience is sincere, then there is a proper reciprocation, and the Bhagavatam manifests at that time.
But there are only two, aren't there? The speaker and the listener.
What?
There are only two.
The
speaker and the listener.
Yeah. Vishwanath Chakravarti Kala, of course, there's two listeners, one who is inquiring and one who is just passively listening.
But the one who is inquiring is a listener too.
Two types of listeners. Like that. One is listening more.
Thank you, but could you just clarify? I've heard that Lord Chaitanya actually studied Nyaya.
Yeah.
And he actually wrote a text on Nyaya, but then apparently, when another devotee was found to be, another devotee was writing a text, he didn't want to sort of embarrass or humiliate, so he threw it in the Ganges or something.
I haven't heard it. Could it be that? I haven't heard it. I know Jiva Goswami specifically went to Varanasi and he studied very deeply the Mayavada philosophy. And Mahaprabhu, before he took to the Sankirtan movement, he was a great pundit. So he was teaching Nyaya and things like that in his school, in his toll. So maybe at that point there was a pastime. I haven't heard it, but there could have been.
So I've read a reasonable amount of Mathis philosophy, and it seems really clear that he's using a very Nyaya style of dispute and counter-dispute. So he engages in a lot of this argument, counter-argument style. So how would we view the status of that kind of skill? Because it could come implicitly, or it could come formally, like you learn it formally. Is there a place for learning it formally in Krishna consciousness?
They have a Sanskrit school in Vrindavan now, which was started by Gopipurana Dhanaprabhu, and they actually base it upon the Sanskrit grammar, which was developed by Jiva Goswami. And I believe there they do study these things. But I mean, generically in ISKCON we don't, like across the board. I mean, we do. I mean, we learn arguments. Prabhupada was always arguing, counter-arguing. When you hear the morning walks, you know, he's walking along and he says, you know, challenge me. And then he starts and then, it's, you know, goes back and forth. You know, the whole life comes from life. That was all based upon that. So Prabhupada was teaching us that. But it's not like we studied in a formal fashion. But I think, you know, maybe those are more scholarly in the movement. They have an opportunity, they go to these Sanskrit schools and that to study it. But in this kind, it's more something we just learn a little bit more implicitly just through our lectures in our class and listening to Prabhupada's lectures and not a formal study. Yeah, when he was, before he began the Sangatana movement.
And he used to do all the dharmas at that time.
Yeah.
Not after that.
Yeah, when he was Nimai Pandit.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole of Navadvipa used to try to avoid him.
Yes.
He would just argue with everyone just for the sake of argument. He would go to someone and challenge them and say, what is your opinion? And they would give him the opinion. And then he would defeat it. And then once they became dejected that he defeated them, he'd say, actually, you were right. Then he'd reinstate their arguments. And then he'd say, no, actually, I was right. And then he would re-defeat it again. So everyone just became fed up. They just didn't even want to go near him because every time that they went near him, it just became like a whole... He was just having fun.
And nobody can learn all these things because he was himself.
Yeah. No one could defeat him. All the Vaishnavas used to think, why are you wasting your... And Advaita Acharya used to say to him, why are you wasting your time? He said, you're such a brilliant person. Why do you waste your time with all this useless discussion when you could be doing some devotional service? And he used to just smile because he knew that the time was coming when he'd manifest. Okay. A sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits to gather many disciples. Nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. So you'll see within the Nectar of Devotion, the same instructions are given by Rupa Goswami. So it's based on this part of the Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami, when he comments on Rupa Goswami's instructions in the Nectar of Devotion, he says it's for a devotee, he can make many disciples. So what it's saying here is that if one's making many disciples for material purposes, then it is not allowed. But if you're making many disciples because you're trying to increase the amount of devotees, then it's allowed. Prabhupada had 5,000 disciples, so... Sure, Prabhupada made many disciples, but the motivation was pure. That's the point. A peaceful, equipoised person who is factually advanced in spiritual consciousness does not need to accept the symbols of a sannyasi, such as Tridanda and Kamandalu. According to necessity, he may sometimes accept those symbols and sometimes reject them. So in the purport, Prabhupada mentions the four types of sannyasis: Kutichaka, Bahudaka, Parigrajaka, Charaparamahamsa. And then Prabhupada explains that this section of the Bhagavatam is speaking about Paramahamsa, which means the topmost sannyasi, which means someone who's fully realized in Krishna consciousness. Not everyone, there's the point we have to understand, because we saw one of our sannyasis had some trouble in the last month or so. Another sannyasi last year, our GBC, he also had trouble. So we have to understand that sannyasi is an ashram. It's a process of purification. There are four levels of sannyas, and the fourth is Paramahamsa. That was like Prabhupada's level. But the other sannyasis are generally Parigrajakacharya, which means they're moving around and preaching. So it means they're not fully realized yet. So even if the sannyasis fall down, we have to understand they're still practicing. Right? They're still purifying themselves. They haven't come to the highest level yet. Because sometimes the devotees become confused. How can that happen? How can such a... It's still sadhana. It's still purification. It's not free from the bodily concept of life. It's overcoming the material desires. It's not free from material desires. Obviously, a sannyasi is more advanced, otherwise he wouldn't have taken sannyas. But it doesn't mean that just when he takes sannyas, that's it, he's finished. Right? That's like the final level of purification. That's the point. Okay. Which one?
To preach, such sannyasis may accept the symbols of sannyasa such as Dhamma and Kamandalu.
Yeah. Prabhupada's point is that Paramahamsa doesn't need to carry them, because a sannyasi of a lower order, Prabhupada actually says in other places of the Bhagavatam, a sannyasi of a lower order, he must carry the danda. Because it's like a symbol of Varnashram. So he must carry. But a Paramahamsa, like Prabhupada, he didn't have to carry. Because, you know, what the danda is just a danda. He doesn't need to carry a rod which reminds him to use the body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. Because he's using the body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. So it doesn't matter. But for the other sannyasis, who are not on the Paramahamsa level, they should carry it. Because then it reminds them. You know, body, mind, and words are for Krishna. Like that. But Prabhupada says this section is speaking about Paramahamsa. That's why it's saying so. Although a saintly person may not expose himself to the vision of human society, by his behavior his purpose is disclosed. To human society he should present himself like a restless child, and although he is the greatest thoughtful orator, he should present himself like a dumb man. So you'll see the sannyasis, quite often they don't get involved in material affairs. Just like a few times I've discussed, you know, material, because I'm a grihastha. Grihastha means you have material problems. Because you're a grihastha, you have to have material problems. Otherwise you're not a grihastha. Right? So sometimes I've spoken to the sannyasis about my material problems, and I can see they're not really that interested. Right? And the reason they're not interested is not because they're callous or not because they don't care. But in order for them to stay fixed in what they need to be fixed in, they can't get involved. It's not their ashram. And actually, my spiritual master said this to me many years ago. Not to me, but he was speaking to me, but he was speaking generally. He said, actually, Grihastha's business is not the business of the sannyasis. And one of the difficulties for the sannyasis is that sannyasis are usually the gurus in ISKCON. So the Grihasthas go to them with their problems, but it's not the sannyasis' duty to work out the Grihasthas' problems. And I remember one time I was speaking to my spiritual master and he said, actually, you should be speaking to Aniruddha Prabhu. Because he's a grihastha, you can speak to him about these things. He actually helped me, he did listen, he did give me instructions. He said, actually, this is not my position. You know, so we should understand, one, that we should not go to the sannyasis with all our material problems, because it's not their duty to resolve these things. And secondly, if you are speaking to them and they don't seem like they're that interested, that's because they're not that interested. Because they're on another platform of spiritual life. You know, sometimes I'm speaking to them, I'm telling them things, and they're just looking at me like, I can see they're not that, because they need to keep their mind somewhere else. So we should respect their ashram very carefully. We should not. That's why, you know, Radhanath Swami has the best system. That he has the counselor system. So the grihasthas go to the grihasthas to get their what they need. They don't go to the sannyasi. Because you know, it's not the sannyasi's business to work out the grihasthas problems. That's why he's a sannyasi, because he's gone past the grihasthas problems. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. So tomorrow night we'll continue with this chapter. Hear more about the sannyasashram. Tomorrow night Prahlad Maharaj gives a very interesting analogy to explain. So, please come.